never forget that he was doing battle for a human world,
on that
as
note,
Fanon said.
At
yes.
that note, we have to wrap up the show, but we won't wrap up the conversation. We'll continue it, and we'll put it online at democracynow.org. Sonia Sanchez, renowned writer, poet, playwright, and activist, thank you for joining us. Larry Hamm, chairman of the People's Organization for Progress. Kamozi Woodard, the author of A Nation Within a Nation, Amiri Baraka, and Black Power Politics. Larry Hamm, chair of the People's Organization for Progress, and Felipe Luciano, poet, activist, journalist, remembering Amiri Baraka. I'm Amy Goodman-Gonzalez, and go to our website for a copy of the DVDs. Thanks so much.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal from WHFR Dearborn, right here from Henry Ford Community College. How are you doing out there today? You know, this show is all about local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the nearby community, too. My name is Jay Koronick. I'm station advisor here, as well as host of the show, along with Dennis Reimars, our WHFR news director.
Yay. There should always be applause or some kind of theme music for me alone after that.
We can look up for a sound effect.
You always say that, but every time I bring something up,
there's a lot of people in the student center. Of course, we have soundproofed studio here, but today is sort of a business career exploration day for high school students.
Sure.
Both men and women are here from high school, young men and women, and I could call them boys and girls, but they're all dressed up.
Yeah.
They're in suits
it
and
changes
ties.
The
they
title.
Think that's going to get them a job.
Yeah. they'll definitely learn.
It might help, but who knows? But so it's actually very busy, even though classes haven't started. Classes, I want to tell you, start officially for the winter semester, as we call it, going from, next Monday, January 13th, all the way through just the beginning of May, okay? And that's our winter semester here at Henry Ford Community College. And registration is going to actually be extended. Again, if you need to be admitted, you need to come to campus to do that. And they're actually going to be open tomorrow, and the hours are... I think it's 8 to 2, 9 to 2, something like that. Maybe 10 to 2. Oops, I didn't write that down. That's terrible. But it is tomorrow on campus at our HFCC Welcome Center, which is actually a building just north of our north parking lot. And they'll take care of admitting you. Now, if you're not admitted by the end of Saturday, 2 p.m., you can't come to this semester, this winter semester. You could be admitted and then come in spring or summer or fall, because you got to be admitted first. But you need to get here and get admitted. Now, registration, that is enrollment, if you have been admitted before and in previous semester, going back a few years, I think, you could do it online.
Sure.
You can go to the website, WHFR, I'm sorry, not our website, no, hfcc.edu, and put in your student ID and information, then you can choose from classes. If you don't do that, by Monday, though, if you're not actually enrolled in the semester, even by online, because you've been previously admitted, you can't get in, okay? It does say in one flyer here, late enrollment is the 19th, which is, in fact, next week, Friday. But that means if you're already here and enrolled, and admitted and enrolled by the end of Saturday, then you could switch around.
Right.
You could add and drop a little bit before Friday. But if you don't get there, and get admitted and enrolled by Saturday 2 p.m. You can't be part of that. And that's you might say, well, it's a little restrictive of policy. No, it isn't. We actually changed that to this. This is what most colleges do, folks. And seriously, why miss 1/15th of the semester? Things do happen on the first day and the second and the third day or fourth day if there's 4 days in that you meet each week, you got to be there, or you're off to a very bad start, and you're probably doomed, if not semi-doomed at least.
That, I don't know about doom, but no, you're definitely there. Things are gone over the very, very first day. It's not just a here's our syllabus and did you all have a nice winter? You know, it's there's stuff we're learning. I have a question though. What do they do about the classes that don't begin in the 12-week classes that start a month later? I'm curious if that's if you can enroll later for those because they don't start right away.
No, they have this. Well, they have the same never attended date. Let's not talk about that.
Okay. So no, you would have to enroll early, even though it doesn't start for another month.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, the only exception would be probably the 8-week classes that start halfway into the semester and go to the end of the semester.
For instance, TCM 189.
Right. Our staff training classes. We do have one in the first 8 weeks. Meets on Wednesday evening, from 6:30 to about 8:20. But the in the second 8 weeks, there's actually a Thursday section during afternoon hours anyway, 1:10 to 3:00, in addition to a Wednesday evening. So that's open to there's no prerequisite, so it's open to anyone. It is an academic enrollment class. So.
That's awesome. You know, and I looked at your list. We have a lot of things to go over today, so I want to start right now by saying the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at the college or the radio station. And let's segue into your number two bullet point here, because I think you were talking about the fast track in culinary.
Yeah, well, I'd like to, yes, and we'll definitely do that.
Okay. You have something else on your mind?
Well, yeah, I want to do the correction because I don't want to forget the correction.
Good, good.
With help from one of our loyal listeners, Mary Jo, thank you very much for sending me an email. I was going to dump this on Dennis, but he, for personal family reasons, he couldn't be here last week, and so he didn't get the message that I was throwing this on him. research. Oh, my God. Do research for a news show?
That's
pretty radical.
Yeah.
Okay. The ACLU, she found, says, what if I'm homeless in terms of registration?
For voting.
Okay. And the ACLU, which is a national organization, says you don't need a home to register, but you have to identify a place of residence, which can be a street corner, a park, a shelter, or any other place where you usually stay. You should also, and I think this is required in most states, probably in Michigan, provide a mailing address, which can be a local shelter, advocacy organization, outreach center, or anyone else willing to accept mail for you.
Like an in care of certain.
Right.
Right. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. But you have to provide both. Now, that's the voting rights policy, according to the ACLU. And, we hope that sort of answers that question, because, as I said, well, you might as well hurt the homeless because they don't vote.
Right.
But it is hard to vote if you're worried about food and shelter every day of your life.
It's a little bit of a distraction.
Hard to remember what day it is.
Sure.
And it's not that you have a mental problem. I'm just saying
Right. Every
day is pure survival needs fighting bureaucracy, you know, in terms of care and trying to get a job, trying to find the next place to stay and the next place to eat and so on.
How much time would they have to do research on the different candidates? I agree.
Right. So. That's my point was, is that most politicians know that, it's okay if you make people homeless, or even if you do nasty things, further nasty things to the poor, because they don't vote, or they don't know who to vote for, who to vote against, so it won't matter. You still get reelected. So you're free and clear. You can do anything you want to. Saving money for all the rich people, richer people. I think that's part of the problem is that there's not the attention to the people that are not part of, let's call them the mainstream.
Right.
But thank you for that research. And there is a League of Women Voters event coming up in February that she also attached a flyer about. And so we will try to download that and promote that later on.
Sure.
Okay, yeah.
Now, thanks looking, for listening, Mary Jo.
Yeah. There might be another person too, but at least we know when Mary Jo's out there.
Exactly.
Huh? Yeah. And the Urban Pressing Guide last Sunday, just two things. One is very well written and a little bit long since we have a lot of stories, we're not going to cover it, but an op-ed by Tom Watkins, who is the sort of education and the futurist writer and commentator now. He was at one point the head of Michigan Department of Education. And then Jennifer Granholm, as governor, didn't feel he was doing enough to support her agenda, and she went through several difficult months of trying to get him out. She finally got him out. But nonetheless, reading his editorials over the years, and several we've actually featured on the show, because I think he really hits it on the spot, maybe with not every editorial, but certainly in this case.
Sure.
Last week, just as a follow-up, locally on Patch.com, there was sort of a op-ed, an editorial commentary from a Catherine Crawford, I believe it was, and it was in regard to Pope Francis and his statements about how we should not forget, we should be compassionate, loving, and even helpful toward the poor in the world. And also, we should stop fighting one another, too, and because that makes people homeless and poor and maimed and dead
right,
pretty effectively, too. Anyway, Tom Watkins actually has a very long op-ed for the space. They really went into a second page for his column. Last Sunday's Dearborn Press and Guide, A Leader Worthy of Following. And he, as Catherine Crawford was a Catholic in his youth, and because of the ages there, they thought that was what Catholicism was all about, is that helping the needy of the world. They thought that even in the Bible, Jesus said something about that.
Wow.
If you want to get into heaven, you better take care of those less fortunate.
Yeah.
It's in the Bible.
Yeah.
Look it up. Well, according to John Stewart last night, I heard him, and you know, the Bible quoted by a Jewish person, I don't know, but I'm sure it's there. I remember that. And he didn't say anything bad about rich people. He just, you know, talked about that there's a lot of agenda items beyond the two or three that only have been associated with the Catholic Church recently. And so he's just expanding the agenda to what it always was, I think, as a former Catholic myself. Anyway, so try to read that. Tom Watkins, A Leader Worth Following. It's definitely in favor of Pope Francis and his agenda for helping the needy of the world.
Yep. It's a radical notion. But.
Yeah. The HFCC offers fast-paced culinary arts degree, and that's on page 11A of the Press and Guide. We actually have it up here, Dennis. We have a little book in front of the DJs.
Yeah.
And
I've been out of
story
time.
Actually came out December 5th, and I guess I just put it in the book here. It's an accelerator program for individuals who are interested in the culinary arts field. It's tailored for those who already have an undergraduate degree and also high school students in a vocational education program with which HFCC has articulation agreements. You know,
the credits
you take
transfer.
The right thing, the
sure.
credits transfer in. Yeah. It says anyone with a college degree in a similar field or another field altogether looking to work in the culinary arts or hotel restaurant professions should look into this. It's according to our chef, Eric Gackenbach. And that's certified, he's the certified executive chef and academic coordinator of HFCC's culinary arts programs. And expanded in 2002, right here in this building, when WHFR expanded. What, you're not getting headphones? Okay, plug in somewhere else, Dennis. You know, the program is accredited with everybody who knows anything about cooking and about managing such programs. And we've got great instructors. We've got all the great certification, like American Hotel and Lodging Educational Institute, National Restaurant Association Educational Foundation, and so on. So the minimum number of credits needed to graduate from this program is 68 credits. Classes are, you know, offered whenever you can get into it. Now, of course, that's with the associates in applied science, and some of those, I think there's credit for your previous college degree. I know a senior citizen, yes, I do, who just enrolled here for free because he's a Dearborn resident, no tuition. He enrolled in this accelerator program.
Love it.
And I think and he has previous college degrees, bachelor's. They asked him, when was the last time you were in school? 50 years ago, their jaw dropped.
Was it really 50 years
ago? Yeah, yeah. Well, here. Yeah. Henry, he actually went to Henry Ford, and she was going to look up his file. Oh, yeah. You were a previous student, you know, 50 years ago. I think it was before computers.
Exactly.
Might have been before pen and paper. I'm not sure. But
she brought out the stone tablet.
He did finally get admitted, and that's it funny. Seemed to me he was talking about, because he's going to go full-time, sort of, and just take the culinary arts classes.
Right.
but they don't offer everyone every semester, and some are sequential. You have to have one before you're ready for the next one and so on. I think it's going to be about three semesters. He should be done about a year and a half.
Okay.
So that 68 credits, folks, in that I just read, I think that includes all the usual two-year liberal arts requirements.
Sure.
And maybe some of the high school people coming in still need to take some of those things, like reading and writing and
right.
some basics there. But nonetheless, this is a great program, and it's talked about in last Sunday's Press and Guide, too, if you want to grab that. That's January 5th. Today is, I didn't mention, January 10th, 2014, as we're doing the show live. Or if you're listening on the podcast, it may be a different day for you from WHFR.FM. That's on page 11A about the culinary arts degree. From Press and Guide from just 2 days ago, Wednesday, January 8th, a little story on page 2, and it's true. We had a big snowstorm here. Did you know that? And it was pretty cold for a while. Yep. In fact, the Dearborn Press and Guide... the Dearborn Press and Guide story, actually, pretty crazy, but no, it's not Press and Guide. The city of Dearborn published their January newsletter today. I got it by email.
Oh, okay.
And you can do that, folks. Go to cityofdearborn.org. You can get the monthly email. Well, something like 21 inches have fallen on Dearborn since December. Maybe December 1st, but 21 inches, and I think 15 in the last week would be my rough guess from how much I shoveled. I live in East Dearborn. And I thought it was interesting that Patch.com said nearly 3,000 vehicles have been ticketed during snow emergencies in Dearborn. You know, if it's a snow emergency, if they blast those sirens the night before at 9 p.m. and 10 p.m., they'll also send a notice to Nixle. If you've signed up through Dearborn Police Department to nixle.com, it's N-I-X-L-E.com, you can just go to that website. They'll even take note of your mobile phone number and send you a text message if there is an emergency of any kind, including snow emergencies. Well, if you're not computer connected and you go to bed early, or there's a big storm outside and you got all the windows like closed, may not hear those sirens. And so I wonder how many people might have that excuse. On December 15th, almost 1,200 vehicles got a ticket in Dearborn. January 2nd, almost 900 more. January 3rd, just the next day, they gave almost 200 more. And on January 6th, they gave 600 more. I don't know how much they have to pay there, but, you know, I think the six was tricky was because there was 2 days last week. There was Wednesday and Thursday. They had a snow emergency for the next day and a snow emergency, but they actually called off the first snow emergency on Thursday afternoon for a couple of hours. And then they decided, oh, we're going to have another snow emergency tonight because we're going to go through and shovel a little more. Okay. And I know that several people on my little street, and these homes are not the average poor homes, but they're nice homes. They're not real rich. It's not Pill Hill in West Dearborn. Sorry, doctors who live there. That's what they call it throughout rest of Dearborn, Pill Hill. I mean, some of those places are millions of dollars right above, right in the area near Ford Field in West Dearborn. Check it out sometime, Dennis, if they let you in the
Jen and I
cul-de-sac.
Lived there, but they weren't big enough houses for us.
Yeah, I know, just not big enough. I know. But nonetheless, in my neighborhood, there's at least three cars that were left on the street. And so they didn't somehow know or realize that there was a snow emergency the day after the first day. And in fact, the first one was called off. I mean, they didn't have to. They could keep it called on until they call it off. You've got to keep your car out of the street. But they called it off for a couple of hours, and I think that confused some people. So I'm not sure which day January 6th was. The question was the third, last Friday. And the second, that's the two in a row right there. So
Thursday
on the first day, those 900 people were guilty of sin. They didn't get the message.
Right.
But on the second day, a lot of those people, I bet, will say, I can't believe. I heard it was called off. And they didn't hear it was back on.
Now, I was out of town. Now, weren't there two waves of snow? One before?
It was snowing for 3 or 4 days, actually.
Okay. Well, we drove back and we got right through. Apparently, they closed down the highways that we took coming home. And we got right through the two storms. So I'm here in front of you by sheer luck.
right.
And driving fast.
One negative thing that I read about is that in Lansing, now, of course, they were warning people one day last week or this week. Was it Tuesday this week?
Because of the chill.
Very cold, don't go out.
Exactly, that was Tuesday.
Okay, only if you have to.
Right.
In Lansing, they made it a law. If you're out during the day, we're going to give you a ticket.
Really?
Now, that's overstepping their boundaries.
Absolutely.
If people want to go out, maybe they need a prescription at their drugstore.
Right.
You know, drugstores, some places were open, life or death. And in Lansing, they actually said you're going to get a ticket if you're on the street. Not parked on the street, but driving around.
Verge Monero, boy.
Well, that was his city. I don't know. Maybe it's something like one of his managers just sort of misstated a little too much about the danger. I don't know if they gave any tickets, if they arrested anyone. But it was actually, they turned it into a law that it was against the law to drive Tuesday. In Lansing.
Just because of your own
bad
health.
Bad weather.
Your own health, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, sure, the roads are bad, and it's cold out there.
Right. Well, you know, and they were so cold, the salt wasn't working. Do you remember a time in Michigan that they used dirt or sand, and either with salt or instead of?
Yeah, I used sand, but now there's layers of sand under the layers of ice.
Yeah,
so.
Well, okay.
But it works.
It does work for traction.
Yeah, if you have any sand, I happen to... Still have some sand for my granddaughter's play bin. She had sort of a sand pool or whatever. Sandbox.
Yeah.
Sandbox, yeah. And I still had the sand. She took the box with her, but I kept the sand.
Well, do you know,
and it worked just fine for traction. But, boy, now that it's melting and it's getting, you know, pockets and the icicles are falling down, the sand doesn't help. I actually... put down this morning a large carpet over my steps.
Really?
Which will be full of ice when I get back. But
sure.
The point is, at least through most of the day, the mailman and others can get in there safely because there's so much ice. I even bought some, you know, rock salt or whatever it's called, you know, de-icing thing that will work today, but it won't completely clear it. It'll still be slippery and bad news. So, okay. Well, the reason I mentioned that story, of course, Dearborn schools were closed for 3 days.
Right.
Which has got to be sort of historic. I don't know the last time it was 3 days.
Especially in a row.
Public schools closed. Yeah, in a row. But Dave Mustin, our friend, head of information, we want information from the Dearborn Public Schools. He said we've still got some extra hours and days in the schedule, so at this point we won't have to add any extra days of attendance in June or whatever.
But it's only January 10th. We still have a month and a half.
But let's not forget, good old Governor Snyder, he did sign legislation, I think last year, allowing schools with too many snow days to avoid having to schedule extra days in the summer. So they don't care about education.
Nah.
Hell with that. You lose a couple days, couple weeks.
Hopefully you'll make it up next year.
Well, yeah, in the same grade maybe.
Sure.
They hold you back.
That's not what I
But so anyway, you could still get state funding too as long as you met the 1,098-hour minimum. Oh, okay.
So basically, they're
saying... So it's an hour.
Yeah.
So you had to be open at least 170 days. So what you could do is extend the day a couple of days to make up the hours you miss.
That's all four.
Well, I know. That's why Mustin said, I think we've got a good example here. We,
your kids
we can add more hours a lot. We're already doing it for the schools in need, you know.
Your kids will be home at 8 p.m.
Yeah, whatever. So I misspoke a little bit about the governor and the law. It just, but you know, at a certain point, I'm not sure the kids are going to pay attention if they're there 12 hours or
exactly.
more. You know, whatever. That's the other option there. Wanted to bring up an editorial, but there's also been things. If you tune into those 24-hour news service channels, you know what they are: Fox and MSNBC and CNN and all that. They have to talk about something. But even in the New York Times, research. Imagine. The real facts from people that have looked into this.
What is that word again?
Yeah. Zero tolerance, it says, reconsidered. And here's a little bit from that editorial from this last Monday, January 6th, in New York Times. Schools across the country are rethinking the so-called zero tolerance discipline policies under which children have been suspended, even arrested, for minor offenses like cursing, getting into shoving matches, and other garden variety misbehavior that in years past would have been resolved with detention or meetings with the child's parents. These reapprisals, says the New York Times, are long overdue. Studies have shown that suspensions and expulsions do nothing. my emphasis, do nothing to improve the school climate while increasing the risk that children will experience long-term social and academic problems. Federal data also indicates that, national data, indicates that minority students are disproportionately singled out for harsh disciplinary measures. And take a look at our prisons in Michigan. Take a look at the ethnic balance there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the economic balance, too.
Yeah.
Talk about economic inequities. These, and, of course, Michigan, you know, even beyond California, a much bigger state in population, mm-hmm. we not only have the highest percentage of any state in the U.S. of our population in prison, but we have a larger number in prison than even California.
We're not bragging about
that's,
that.
That's something out of whack, though.
Right.
That's something wrong there. Do we have all the criminals in Michigan? I don't think so. Oh, yeah, technically we must, because only criminals go to jail, right?
You know, even just a couple of years ago, Michigan or Detroit was had the highest percentage of homeless people in the entire country.
Yes.
I mean, and we're, what, 11th or 12th? I don't even know if we're 11th or 12th as far as population now in the country. But, okay. it was crazy. We had the most homeless people and the highest percentage.
Yep. Well, you can read the story. They give you the facts of the national groups that have looked into these things. And again, the relatively minor discipline that needs to be done, which is turned into arrest or suspension forever or send them to, bad kid school.
Mm-hmm.
And Dearborn has a few of those. That's what I call them, bad kid schools.
Is that the technical term?
Yeah, I'm sure.
The bad kid school.
And, the zero tolerance is not really the way to go. If it was, our court system would have used it years ago.
Sure.
You know, hey, you hit him. Oh, you go to prison. Oh, wait a minute. He hit me first. Oh, extenuating circumstance. Or I hit him by mistake.
Yeah.
I was trying to slam my fist in the wall, then he moved and got his head in the way.
Trying to hit that guy over there, but I hit him.
I mean, our court system, let me remind you folks, our judicial system has jury trials, and even, if not a jury trial, a judge.
Mm-hmm. Bench trial.
The reason they're there is to listen to both sides. Did you do it or didn't you? Okay. And they're listening to not just did you do it or not, they're listening to what actually happened? What was the motivation? What was the intention?
What did the witnesses say?
Right. What do all the witnesses say? And is there another? So if you're not beyond a shadow of doubt guilty of intending and committing this crime, then you don't deserve to be punished at all. I remember there was a old science fiction film. I don't think I wanted to see it, but the point was called Judge Dredd.
Oh, sure.
And Sylvester Stallone,
yep.
And in the future, if you come up in front of him, you're guilty and you're going to be punished. You're going to be probably killed. And, that's tough love. Well, no, what if you're innocent? Or what if there's reasons why things happened the way they did? That's part of our basic judicial system here in the United States of America. God bless America. We need to preserve that. But actually, in the schools, there's rarely trials. I mean, they don't have official trials. They have, the principal will ask two or three people
right.
a question about something. But basically, you chewed your sandwich into the shape of a gun. You're out of here. No school for a year for you. And this happened somewhere in the country.
Right.
As well as kids actually making the gun shape with their two fingers, their thumb and their first finger,
uh-huh.
like going bang or something. Oh, you're out of here. No, that's not zero tolerance, maybe for actual guns or knives,
That's what I thought the article was
and
about.
And for other problems. No, this is crazy. Some places in the country, these things are happening.
Exactly.
And so much so that in Oklahoma, there's an article in the American Free Press newspaper, we might talk about it's a national publication. In Oklahoma, one of the representatives, a Republican, is trying to pass a law that prevents schools from either arresting or suspending for a year or forever kids from school for these minor offenses. There shouldn't be zero tolerance, he's saying, in those situations. But that's not passed yet because, as you said earlier, it's Oklahoma.
It's Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So I don't know if we need a law that would prevent our, but principles, you know, oh, public want to prevent another massacre or something. A shoving match, a cursing, wearing a T-shirt with a picture of a gun on it.
Mm.
Is that grounds for suspension?
No.
I mean, talk to the parents.
Turn your shirt inside out or whatever. But
just temporarily, yeah. if other people are being disturbed by
exactly.
it. I don't know. That it's way out of control, and the school systems need to take action, or as they know in Dearborn, our legislature loves to micromanage.
Oh, absolutely.
So who knows what they'll do about it.
As a parent, though, I can't imagine sending my kid to school with a shirt with a gun on it. I don't know. Call me old school, but I just wouldn't do that.
Well, there's actually, if you remember, in the Bill of Rights, the whole principle of bearing arms.
It's right.
actually supposedly illegal.
I totally get that. You know. At the same time, why stir up controversy if it can be? You can wear the other shirt? You know what I mean? I get it. What you're saying is you should be allowed to do what you want.
One of the interesting questions is free speech. Do students have a right to free speech, like on their shirt?
Apparently not.
You know, free this criminal. I think he's innocent. Let's right. say it's on a T-shirt mm-hmm. or something. Or let Eric, pardon Eric Snowden.
Sure.
Which some people are actually supporting in this country. I'm not sure a high schooler would be aware enough to, or sophisticated enough to even know who Eric Snowden was. No disrespect here. You must have heard the name. He's now being allowed to testify somewhere in the European Union by video from Russia.
He's in Russia. He has asylum, right?
All about, the spying that's been going on by the U.S. to the European Union.
And
of course, the United States government, the president said, please, don't let him testify.
Well, we look very silly.
Well, of course we look silly. I mean, we've been doing things that we said, we didn't admit we said. In fact, the head of the NSA, last, was it November? Said, oh, no, we don't do that. We don't do it intentionally. He added intentionally.
Yeah.
Oh, just accidentally, we're collecting everything.
Everything.
Everything. Internet, telephone, what the heck. But we don't look at it intentionally, just sort of out of the corner of our eyes, I guess. And he was lying. He was basically lying. They do it intentionally. Okay. Moving on. Yeah. Jim Hightower?
You bet.
He's pointing to the clock on the wall here, so yeah. Jim Hightower today is talking about, let's see, two issues. Freeing the internet journalism from ads. Would that change if some of these news websites couldn't have ads?
Well, then we would have to pay a subscription fee.
Yeah.
Attention class, here's today's new word, native advertising. Okay, that's two words, but it's one concept, and it has nothing to do with native people. Rather, it's a phrase sprung on us by the wonky wordsmiths of internet media, who also refer to it as, quote, brand content, meaning that these particular web pages are not articles, but paid advertising. But they don't want to be too explicit about distinguishing between genuine news items and ad hustles. Why not? Money, of course. In today's fledgling web publications, from such newbies as BuzzFeed to the digital versions of old-line pubs like the New York Times, there's been a blurring of the line between the publication's legitimate journalistic content and the faux stories that are provided by marketers and designed to look like real articles from non-biased news sources. For readers and viewers, the questions are obvious. Whose stuff is this, and what can I trust? The best ethical response by online publishers would be to draw a bright line around all branded content. Perhaps with some flashing neon lights and honking horns to announce, this is an ad. But no, while internet publishers say they seek journalistic integrity, they're hungrier still for advertisers' dollars. So their game is to flash just enough integrity without losing the bucks. That's a losing game for integrity. Media analyst Bob Garfield notes that the very effectiveness of native advertising depends on it being confused with editorial content. Eliminate the confusion, and the ethical failure diminishes, he says, but what will also diminish to near vanishing point is the readership of those adverts. This is Jim Hightower saying, any media so dependent on corporate money that it resorts to deceiving its audience is, in a word, dependent. Also, untrustworthy. We need public financing to free the independence of journalism on the web.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
We're just doing one Jim Hightower comment for today. We have so many stories. New year, and the stories are rolling in. Stuff is happening. During the cold, I wanted to mention this during the, we were talking about the cold and the freezing here, the pipes burst, and the heat was off at the new student apartments that are closer to Fairlane Town Center. They're on the Fairlane Town Center side of the street, but actually they house students that are going to University of Michigan Dearborn. The owners wouldn't return a call from the Press and Guide reporter about it. What's interesting to me, these things happen, of course, and maybe they were busy fixing them, that's why they couldn't return the call. But Dennis was sharing with me, and I saw at the end of the story, this water pipes of a complex that they built down at Wayne State for Wayne State students also burst in cold weather, not recently, but
right,
like last winter or
same
something.
Same company.
And this is an opinion, and of course all the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College. But I know from my experience at Oakland University, all my school days, going back 40 years, okay, that when contractors, because I hear things and I see things, when contractors build dormitories or school buildings, they do it as cheaply as they can, because they're going for low bid, but in fact, they charge a lot more per square foot than if they built a house for you or if they built a building for even the city of Dearborn. And why do they do that? I don't know, but that's what I'm told. And so you're just doomed to get poor quality because they had to cut the budget to get the bid. And it's, you know, I liken it unto Henry Ford Community College and a couple additions we had years ago. We could have bought, instead of the Fine Arts Center, mm-hmm, we could have bought half a block in West Dearborn, about 10 homes in West Dearborn, historic district too, what the heck. Now, of course, our Fine Arts Center has a big auditorium. None of these houses have a big auditorium. But what I'm saying is, all those houses, 10 of them, okay? In fact, Wayne State and other big urban universities for years have used former residential homes for offices and even classrooms and so on. Oh, it's a lot better energy-wise, I think, to make it all one big building to heat it all at one time. But I'm just saying the cost of it per square foot is really unfair, is really huge. The state shouldn't allow it. And the quality issues are bound to be there if you always go with the lowest price. And it's hard to, you know, specify this or that. I remember the Fine Arts Building here on at campus I just mentioned. It was finished in 1981. They found out 10 years later that all the three-prong plugs, you know, the grounded AC outlets, didn't have any ground wire connected to them.
Oops.
That saves a third of the time for the electricians that came in because they didn't have the extra wire to connect.
Right.
Physically, in all those sockets. They had no grounding. They had to redo all the circuits, all the wires, and all the walls of the Fine Arts Building when we had to upgrade to computers, which definitely needed a lot of secure and grounded circuits. Let's go sue the company. Well, it was 10 years after. The company was gone. They had, what is it, disenfranchised? They didn't go out of business. You just disincorporate.
Okay.
Somehow.
They're on a beach in Tahiti.
Yeah, right.
With and HFCC money.
Right. And so not only was it a fantastic price per square foot, but they didn't even do the job the right way in terms of electricity anyway. Oh. And what can you do? Because these companies, they often form, they incorporate for a single job, they make a bid, they do it, and then they're gone. It's like a guy that his construction company did work on my house 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And we got through it. One of the workmen said, you know, they don't usually come out this well. And I was worried when I heard that. And, oh, I've had problems since then. And, oh, I found out where they cut corners and so on. And they were out of business two renovations later.
Really?
Just because they didn't want anybody to come after them, I think.
Yeah,
you can't sue somebody, I mean, the company, if the company's not there.
Well, not only that, but you can't wait.
Remember,
10
companies
years
are people, too, except when they disenfranchise or disincorporate.
You can't wait 10 years either. The company would logically say, hey, you didn't know about this in 10 years and you didn't need it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well,
there's
a
statute of limitations, I'm sure.
We didn't even have a campus electrician at the time.
Right.
Now we have one guy.
Well, yeah, but I'm sure
he's
fine.
Well, theoretically, you go around, there's meters.
Sure.
You plug them in, every socket, and it'll tell you if it's grounded or not. But you got to buy a meter.
Yep.
And you got to walk to every darn socket.
Yeah.
And one person has to do it who knows what the readings mean. So it costs a lot of money. That costs money.
That'll keep you grounded.
Yeah. It needs a full-time person. Well, we finally got a full-time person.
All
so,
right.
Okay. Moving on. That's just a comment of mine in general about construction companies, not necessarily people that did the apartments, but kind of suspicious. I think the guys that did the plumbing for them down at Wayne State were the same ones that did it here.
And, coincidence.
And we don't know, because nobody's been able to get the full story yet, how long they were without heat in the worst time of the year.
Right.
And how many students were disenfranchised. What did they do? Did they send them to sleep in sleeping bags at the town center or inside a building at the student center? I don't know. What
sure, they
did.
Had to fend for themselves.
Yeah. By the way, put this on your agenda. We're sort of skipping around here. Dearborn City Council has their first official meeting January 14th, 7:30 p.m.
Okay.
Next week,
that's
Tuesday.
Tuesday, yep.
Yep. In the American Free Press, and this is a sort of alternative journal, they have a few things that they're always turning their stories towards, so they're slanting, I'd say. They have a few editorial stances, and I'll say up front, one thing is they don't like Israel. They don't like the country of Israel and what they've been doing in the Middle East, but leave that aside. Here's a story about Michigan that's on their front page from their current issue. And you probably can't get this at a newsstand. American Free Press, though. Yeah, they've got a website, AmericanFreePress.net, okay, if you're interested. But always alternative ideas that'll challenge you, and you may disagree. I disagree with most of everything I read in here. But
really?
Nonetheless, some of the stories are really groundbreaking. Yeah, and this one talks about Michigan. On December 26, Michigan became the fourth state to sign into law a bill that formally tells Washington, that's D.C., that Michigan will not cooperate with the federal government in arresting and indefinitely detaining American citizens on U.S. soil as, quote-unquote, enemy combatants.
Good. Good for us.
Now, that's under the, way too broad, as I would say, National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA, of several years ago. Which is crazy. Because this means no lawyer. They can keep you in jail as long as possible. I mean, it's in our Constitution. You can't have that kind of sequestering. You can't take someone out of their life, put them somewhere without telling anybody or getting them a lawyer or even having a trial relatively promptly. You can't do that. Of course, we have been doing it.
Right.
But it's a question about what about American citizens? And we've been doing it to American citizens who aren't on U.S. soil.
They're considered enemy combatants.
And right now, the government still says, oh, we can grab them right now and keep them in jail forever and never charge them and put them anywhere. You can put them in Guantanamo. We can put them anywhere in the world and torture them, whatever we want to do, as long as we say, no proof, no evidence, that they're enemy combatants. Well, that's the most dangerous law to ever have. That should be repealed, my humble opinion, mm-hmm. and others. National Defense Authorization Act. But the state of Michigan, at least, has said, and they didn't go far enough, but they said, you can't, or you should not, definitely. Michigan won't help you anyway. So send those federal troops in, though, and we'll let them do it. We won't cooperate in arresting and indefinitely detaining American citizens in U.S. soil. But I'm just thinking, a Michigan citizen goes to Windsor, and they arrest them there.
Now,
because that's not U.S. soil. So don't travel to foreign countries, people, because Michigan won't stand behind you.
So when they say Michigan, are they saying, is that from the governor's office?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's an actual law. It was passed and signed by Governor Snyder.
I like it.
December 26th. And there's other states that are going around, and it's the 10th Amendment here about mm-hmm. the unfair search and seizure and imprisonment and so on, I guess. There's other states that are considering that. In Virginia, there's a law. They passed a similar act that became law on July 1st, 2012, which is the first state that passed a similar law. And Alaska did it in June 2013, last year. And on October 1st, Governor Jerry Brown of California signed it into law at that time, October, last October. So they just say they're not going to help the federal government. It doesn't mean the federal government, though, can't come in and just grab them, unfortunately. By the way, other states that are considering passing that, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Missouri, Kansas, and Washington, not D.C., Washington the state. In South Carolina, a measure was passed only by their state Senate and it may not go the rest of the way. Anyway, that's the TAC, the 10th Amendment Center. You can look them up on the internet and see how they're trying to make this happen. It's something, right? I mean, what should really happen is our U.S. Congress, that is legislature and Senate, should repeal the National Defense Authorization Act. There's no doubt about it. Not just for that reason, but others too. And a few more laws we don't need. Okay. Let's see. FYI, and it's in the American Free Press, this current issue. You know, there was a story that came out about 2 weeks ago that multivitamins, according to research, really do no good. Okay. And it was even on WDET News.
Mm-hmm.
They just said it. Well, folks, all those multivitamins are not going to do you any good. Now, I would expect Fox News. I would expect other people to grab onto it. Turns out that the study was funded by Big Pharma. Okay, they don't like people taking vitamins because they might not go to their doctor and get prescription drugs that they can make a profit off of.
Sure.
Of course, they don't like that. I mean, it's not good business for them. They funded this. And I looked into just a couple details. You can also go to folks besides American Free Press to read the story. Life Extension Foundation, that's LEF.org, and the doctors there have an extensive commentary on this. Is just crazy, crazy study. You can read about so-called scientific studies that have no grounds in validity once you look at how they did them. First of all, most of the vitamins they used were synthetic. Some people think only natural is better, but they're at such low quantities. I think my Centrum Silver even has more vitamins and minerals in it than what they used in the study. And Centrum Silver is not much. I mean, it's really not much, according to a lot of doctors, in terms of vitamin D supplements. I have a doctor that, he's recommending a lot more vitamin D, D3, technically, folks, if you're interested. I'm not recommending that, but I'm just saying a lot more than the so-called recommended standard. And so if you do the research, folks, multivitamins are not bad for you, and they're not a waste of money. Although you should read and study and find out what's good for you and talk to your doctor and see if at least he will allow it. But crazy how Big Pharma and their big public relations machine got that on all the networks, all the stations, including WDET, just two or three lines. Hey, all those multivitamins you've been taking, they do you no good. That's just wrong. That's just not true if you look at the details, even at the study.
It seems to me that I remember a study saying that an excess of vitamins and minerals isn't good what were you going to say?
There's toxic levels of like vitamin A.
Sure.
I think it's more than 20,000 units a day or something, 20,000 IU. So there are some toxicity things to be concerned about, but most vitamins and minerals don't have that issue.
No,
it's just a question of whether or not they're really going to help in mega doses, as it's called.
Right.
Vitamin C, for example, you take more of it, it's going to come out when you go to the bathroom.
Exactly. And that was my point. So, you might be wasting money by taking more,
yeah,
but by taking vitamins and minerals in general, it doesn't seem like that would do no good.
And that's the opinion of Dennis Reimers.
We're
not diagnosing or recommending any treatments
doctors.
Because we'll be sued and thrown in jail. if you think we are, and we're not.
Without counsel.
FDA will be down on us.
I know we're not going to read the whole thing, but I thought it'd be
good. Sure.
This is from, actually, I got it online today.
Yes, it was only on, it'll probably be in the Press and Guide this weekend.
And it was
Sunday.
Morris Goodman, his guest column, and it's entitled Extending Unemployment Benefits is Important for Many Families. And I won't read the whole thing, but basically he's saying that and he points to the Republicans, and he says that based on them saying, and even he quoted Rand Paul last week, who said that the federal government the benefits are doing people a disservice by not giving them a push to find more work. If you cut back on it, people need to go out there and they'll do what they need to do. A lot of people rely on these benefits. A lot of people do. And just read the article. It was the first thing that came up when I went on the Press and Guide website. And again, it's rather lengthy. It's a couple pages here. What are you going to say?
It's actually not that bad. He says, I'll just read the beginning.
Okay.
As Americans, we expect the federal government to do certain things, one of which is to recognize when the national economy is not performing sufficiently well to provide enough employment for those who want to and are able to work. We then expect, in conjunction with the 1946 Full Employment Act, I was born that year. I don't remember it. I guess I was too young to read the papers. I started reading them when I was one, but not in the first year.
It was
year.
Buried in Section B, don't worry.
That the federal government will do something about the problem. To stay in, of course, the Full Employment Act. It's sort of like the War on Poverty.
Yeah, exactly.
I haven't gotten to either one of them yet. And full employment, that was 68 years ago. To state the obvious, there are 7% of us unemployed today nationwide, which is greatly understated, he says, due to how many have simply given up looking for work, or I might add, have become homeless.
Right.
And there are 6 people chasing every new job posted. 6 people, at least, on average. Unemployment compensation is a necessary lifeline for millions. And, of course, at the federal level, it hasn't been extended yet. They haven't supposedly found the money or found the will to extend unemployment funds for those that, lost it in December.
Mm-hmm. And the Republicans say that they are in favor of this, but they want to be able to pay for it first. So
But people are starving now.
Exactly.
And have for the last month.
Yes. Yeah.
In simpler words, Morris says, there simply aren't enough jobs to go around. Americans do not want their jobless fellow countrymen to go hungry. Really?
Again, a radical notion.
Yeah. To the extent that the Republicans, he mentions names here, argue with this basic premise, they do so at their peril. And he's talking about the elections this year and in 2016, of course. He goes on about that. Jack Lessenberry this week from Metro Times has a somewhat similar story and asks a proverbial question. Is government supposed to make life better? Once upon a time, I always like it when he starts out that way.
I say yes, but go ahead.
Like a fairy tale.
Yeah.
Once upon a time, a lot of us thought politics and government could be used to make life better for people. That's what Franklin D. Roosevelt and the New Dealers thought when they pushed through programs that probably saved capitalism and democracy. Programs we're still using today. Try imagining our country without Social Security. That's what John F. Kennedy believed. Here's a quote from JFK. If a free society cannot help the many who are poor, it cannot save the few who are rich. That was in his famous 1961 inaugural address. Trust me, he didn't mean help them by giving them a tax cut or cutting back regulations. Lessenberry says he meant using tax dollars to help them get an education, get better housing, cleaner water, and job training. Lyndon Johnson, Lessenberry goes on, knew very well government could help people. He had grown up surrounded by poverty in rural Texas, where electricity was an impossible dream. Half a century ago this month, he launched the War on Poverty, which today is sneered at by the braying talk radio donkeys. And I should say, certain 24-hour cable TV news channels.
That's right, but not here.
And they have their own video donkeys. Nobody would deny that LBJ's programs had failures and excesses. Some of them weren't sufficiently thought out. Some had too much idealism about the poor. But the fact is that the War on Poverty did work, and would have worked far better if the Vietnam War hadn't drained resources to fund it. As a story in the January 5th edition of the New York Times put it, despite everything, those efforts have, quote, succeeded in preventing the poverty rate from climbing far higher. There is broad consensus that the social welfare programs created since the New Deal have hugely improved living conditions for low-income Americans. And I should add, that goes for seniors, too. Seniors are so much better off now that there's Social Security, certainly, than they would have been 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago. He says, well, of course they have. You don't need the New York Times to tell us this, folks. Lessenberry says, imagine life without food stamps. Incidentally, I've never been on food stamps, never been on welfare either. I did get unemployment once for a few weeks decades ago. Otherwise, I have cheerfully paid into the system. Today, I have a very nice life. I'm not rich, but a nice house in a great neighborhood. I have a car, and I'm stubbornly healthy. I have no children to educate. While I'm a full-time public university faculty member, I also make money in the private sector. Depending on how long I live, I may well end up paying more in taxes than I get in cash benefits, which is precisely as it should be. I had a decent public school education, which enabled me to go to a state-subsidized university that in turn allowed me to eventually succeed by working hard. Millions of other kids did the same, and when they succeeded, society won in all sorts of ways. Most Americans understood that 50 years ago. Today, we seem to have forgotten it. And so you can read the rest of that for yourself in this week's Metro Times, Jack Lessenberry, or go to their website, metrotimes.com, and you can read it there. So what is the purpose of government, federal government? Who could do it other than the federal government on some of these programs? It's not going to happen with private industry. Never did before, folks. That's my personal opinion. By the way, when I go shopping in West Dearborn, East Dearborn, I believe, and, you know, it's not a sophisticated analysis, at least two or three people out of four or five in front of me, usually a long line at my store, are using bridge cards. That's welfare, isn't it? Isn't that how they, bridge card, that's how they give you the money
instead of food stamps
to live.
Now, yes.
Yeah, it's not stamps you tear out or something.
Right.
It's a like a credit card, a bridge card.
A debit or whatever, sure.
There's a picture of a bridge on it. I think it's kind of orange-like, I've seen them.
Okay.
And I'm standing in line with my American Express credit card.
Okay,
it's a no-fee American Express, folks, okay, and it's got 3% discount for grocery store purchases, so, but you got to qualify. Got to have a job, and you got to qualify before you can get this card.
But I'm
embarrassed. Well, they have to qualify for theirs. Yes, I know that. But there's so many. There's so many people, and they don't all look like homeless or whatever. And I feel sorry. I feel guilty, first of all. But I know I am paying my taxes. Why isn't government doing more to help them get a job and get education? I mean, some of these people are going to use that bridge card, and it is a bridge to when they can't afford to live on their own. Some of them just use it until, well, they're destitute. They're homeless. There's no hope. And that's happening more and more. And then when benefits are cut back, no more bridge cards.
Right.
Okay, for certain people. And so there's a lot in this area. I mean, in East Dearborn. And without the government support, these entitlements, how would they live? They couldn't live. They don't have a job. I bet most of them are willing to work. I mean, they seem strong enough and, you know, tall enough. I don't know. They could have other issues I can't see. Whatever it takes. There's some minimum height standards.
I'm sure.
You know, can't work behind a bar if you're 3 foot tall. You know,
well, you can't
get a box, I guess.
Exactly.
No disrespect to short people. No, I'm sorry, but I'm just saying
Cedar Point, you know?
There are some jobs that do require, like construction work. Do you know how to use a hammer?
Right.
You know?
No, there's
just
some
saying,
basic skills, sure.
Okay.
But no, good points, and I don't know the answers to those
questions. Well, no, I'm just saying we have commentators that are raising these questions, and, you know, it's been talked about, well, just briefly mentioned by Goodman, you know, the Democrats are going to use this income inequality and the dumping on the poor in the 2014 election in 2016 to get more people there. Here comes an opinion of mine. Democrats and Republicans together haven't done much to propose real programs that are going to help people. A few things like the stimulus package back after the disaster of 2008, 2009, the federal money there for reinvestment in roads and things that we desperately need. But I almost want to see a majority of people vote for another party. But you got to be consistent. The only two parties that have a chance, minority parties as they're called today, is the Libertarian Party, which is the third largest in the U.S., and the Green Party. And both of them, I know, if they got in office, very different agendas, but they would do something if they had a majority in the House and Senate. You say, well, that's not going to happen. We're just fighting over a couple seats each way because of gerrymandering. Well, you know, gerrymandering would just go all crazy. It wouldn't work if people turn to vote for Libertarians or Green Party people, because it's been gerrymandered because they know where the Democrats live, they know where the Republicans live who vote, and they cut the lines.
They'd throw everything off.
Yeah, if all of a sudden people started voting, whoever you are out there, Green Party or Libertarian Party, in a majority, gerrymandering wouldn't work at all, and all of a sudden we'd have a new Congress.
Wow.
Right now it's fixed against the Democrats. I mean, it's very hard for the Democrats to get any new seats because of gerrymandering. But if all of a sudden people said, I'm not going to vote Democrat or Republican, I'm going to vote either, you can't split your vote here, Libertarian or Green Party, just as examples. I'm not recommending one or the other, although I am a card-carrying member of both. Talk about conflict of interest.
Sure.
But then the gerrymandering wouldn't work, and you could actually elect a whole new Congress with a whole new, but an awful lot of people got to get out of this Democrat or Republican mindset.
Right.
There's other choices there. And if you get a new party in, imagine how giddy they would be if they actually had a majority, too, as well as the president.
Yep. And listen,
imagine the programs. And they'd be radically different. Libertarian programs would be radically different than Green Party. But you'd get some new stuff done. A new direction would start right away. And the Dems and Republicans are just, you know, I hate to use the metaphor, but I love the metaphor. Rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. That's how I see it.
Hey, do you remember that when the Dearborn Historical Society came out with those anthologies of the writings about Dearborn? I think there were like three of them. Three different books. Well, they're doing. They're looking for something now from Dearborn. From Dearborn's best animal tales. Huh. This gentleman, his name is Henry Fisher. He's a librarian at Dearborn Public Library, and he says it doesn't matter. He goes, whatever you have, short stories, real or fictional, poems, essays, it can include anything can be included as long as it touches on animals, wild ones or pets, nature, wildlife, or the environment. This is something they're doing this year. The Big Read Project is going to be focusing on Jack London's Call of the Wild. So get these in. The information is on the Press and Guide website. It's quite a bit here, and you still have time. I'm bringing it up now because the deadline to get the stories into Mr. Fisher is February 1st. So you can get a hold of him at 313-943-2341. That's 313-943-2341, Henry Fisher.
It's 2 o'clock. Do you know where your children are? No, just kidding.
you remember that?
Do you know where you are? Okay, you're listening to WHFR Dearborn, first of all. And we got about 2 more minutes before our podcast cuts off, and Joanne Krasinski will be here with Highway 61 when she gets here. She's driving carefully. I know she is. And that's what matters. Also, the sidewalks are very slippery because there is ice, even though it's sort of melting, but it's very slippery, so she's taking her time. Wanted to mention something last week. I looked at the calendar for the wrong month or something. The Dearborn Free Winter Market continues through April, by the way. That's what the latest press release says that we have here at the station. And I got the date wrong. The next Sunday, the third Sunday in January from 10 to 4, it's at the Ford Community Performing Arts Center, January 19th. The 19th. It has to be a Sunday, folks. I think I said the 15th or something crazy. It has to be a Sunday, and it's the 19th. So it's a week from this Sunday, 10 to 4. Yeah, fresh food, fresh vegetables as possible in the winter. Maybe indoor hydroponic tomatoes, I don't know. And also vendors of arts and crafts are going to be there. So it's free to get in, free parking at the center. Okay.
Hey, do you mail a lot of letters, Jay?
Email?
No. Snail mail. No? Snail mail through the regular postal system.
Yeah, email more than the snail mail.
Sure. We all do, I think. But so you know, on the 26th of this month, stamps are going up again. 3 cent increase to 49 cents. But listen, buy those forever stamps. And that's the only reason why I bring it up. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife does a lot of stuff on eBay. She buys the forever stamps. That means whatever she pays for them today, they'll be good till she runs out.
Right. They won't be too little. They won't be obsolete. You have to try to find somewhere to buy one cent stamp
or a three cent stamp. Exactly. So, folks, buy them before the 26th.
Yeah, always buy forever stamps for first class, folks. Sure, that should be obvious by now.
What else?
Let's see. Well, I thought I had more.
I got a cool thing. Can I bring it up?
Yeah.
This is really cool. I've been traveling a lot lately.
I might run the Jim Hightower
Let me do this quickly then. There's a new website. It's put out by Wayne County. It's on the WayneCounty.com website, Compass, C-O-M-P-A-S-S, .WayneCounty.com. It shows a map of the county with driving conditions available up to the minute, as well as a GPS function. It shows service trucks and their routes, as well as traffic flow, road alerts, construction information, accidents, weather radar, traffic camera access, all this stuff, gas stations.